Today, Conservative backbenchers are urging Boris Johnson to follow Sweden's lead on COVID policy. But are they right? So, John Henley, our colleague Nick Cohen has described Sweden as a libertarian COVID fantasy land. It certainly has caught the interest of right-wing politicians in the Conservative Party, hasn't it?
It certainly has, and all around the world, really. And it's a very unlikely country for the sort of the far right or the conservative wing to be kind of fawning over.
But actually, in Sweden, they think of public health not just in terms of death and awful problems in hospitals, but they think of it in terms of life, living life to the full.
You know, when you look at the draconian nature of the imposition on the British people, I think it's now time to move to a voluntary system, and it's time for us to actually start living like a free people.
Sweden is, after all, you know, one of these kind of Scandinavian bastions of social democracy, a very generous cradle-to-grave welfare state. I mean, it's really classically what libertarians would describe as a big state. And yet, yes, it's being looked at admiringly from those quarters.
But if we look at some other countries, Sweden, yes, but others too, then it does become evident that there are alternative approaches.
And that's why I believe that the government must now make its strategy to enable us to live with the virus and without fear.
I suppose another thing that makes it unusual for conservatives to appreciate it is that there's a very traditional kind of cultural respect for public authority and the government and the sort of the national state agencies, to the point in Sweden where they basically handed over control of the management of the epidemic to the public health agency. The government, the politicians have sort of really taken a back seat throughout the crisis.
And what that meant was that Sweden took a completely different path in handling the COVID pandemic than almost every other country in Europe. A path that is understandably appealing because it involved no national lockdown.
If we wish to get back to a society in which we don't have lockdowns, I think there may be lessons to be learned from our colleagues in Sweden.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, has Sweden's COVID experiment worked? And if so, should Britain have followed it? John Henley, Europe correspondent. Not only are the right wing fawning over a country with a huge welfare system, and as you say, a country run by social democrats on the left, but also a country that has basically handed over responsibility for this to civil servants. I mean, tell me about the person who was put in charge of this.
The person put in charge of it is the chief epidemiologist, Anders Tegnell.
In Sweden, they sing the praises of an unlikely hero. Stockholm tattoo artist Zache Testes is a big Tegnell fan.
A figure of admiration for sort of half of Sweden.
He's kind of like the typical Swede. That's probably why we like him, because we can see our father and mother in his beautiful eyes.
And a figure of absolute detestation for others.
And a follow-up question, do you feel that Sweden has become something of a sort of global punch bag?
Yeah, maybe. Sometimes I feel like a personal punch bag, but that's okay, I can live with it.
He's had experience working for the WHO on vaccination programs. He worked on the Ebola outbreak. You know, a respected medical professional. But he is the sort of the key architect of Sweden's policy.
While the rest of Europe has gone to extreme lengths to safeguard its populations from coronavirus, Sweden is gambling on a different approach.
But he did set Sweden out on a course that very few other countries have followed, if any. And Sweden very rapidly became a real outlier.
Others see it as a reckless experiment that may backfire.
And despite all the criticism and the brickbats that have been thrown at him, he has stuck to that course.
I mean, we basically still think that this is the right strategy for Sweden that we are doing. This is a bit like having an ocean liner and try to steer it with a lag of 3 or 4 weeks.
I mean, how much of an outlier was it? I know that it didn't do a full lockdown, but there were measures put in place. Can you just take us through what his policy actually did?
Yes.
The Swedish government's strategy in response to COVID-19.
So on the 17th of March...
Redan från och med imorgon så kommer alla Sveriges gymnasieskolor...
Sweden closed schools and universities for sort of for the over 16s. Attendance remained obligatory for the under 16s. The population was advised to work from home, if at all possible, until the end of the year. The over 70s and people in sort of at-risk groups were strongly advised to, if not completely self-isolate, to at least leave home as little as possible. Visits to retirement homes, to sort of care homes, were banned from April. And gatherings of more than 50 people were banned. But apart from that, restaurants, bars, cafes, cinemas, gyms, all this sort of thing stayed open.
Some restrictions are in place, though. Restaurants and cafes like this one in Stockholm are no longer able to serve customers at the bar.
People were sort of really strongly advised to observe social distancing, to wash their hands as often as possible. But the measures that Sweden took, on the whole, were not mandatory. They were voluntary. People were simply asked to behave in this way.
So did people follow the suggestions voluntarily?
On the whole, they largely did. The government was estimating by sort of early July that Swedes had actually reduced their degree of social contact by something like 70%. You know, if you look at sort of consumer spending, that declined very similarly, strikingly similarly, in fact, in Denmark and in Sweden. And Denmark had a very, very strict lockdown. In terms of movement, there was some quite interesting data that was published by Citymapper, the travel app, which showed that sort of back in March and April, cities like London and Paris were really completely locked down. Around about 10% of the inhabitants of those cities were moving around to the extent that they did before the lockdown. Stockholm, it was about 20 to 25%. So, you know, more, but still, you know, a 75% fall in mobility around the city.
My name is Lars Treggard. I'm a professor of history, and I lead a big study on social trust here in Sweden.
So you live in Stockholm, don't you?
Yeah, that's correct.
What was it like in those first few weeks of the pandemic?
Well, because we did not experience a full-on lockdown, it was a more relative change from normality to a kind of a new corona normality. So it wasn't just sort of on-off, but it was a more gradual change that affected some parts of your life much more than others.
But overall, the kind of basic policy was not to order people to do things, but to ask them to do things.
Yes, based really on a kind of a three-way dynamic of trust, that citizens trust each other to follow these recommendations voluntarily, a trust in the government and its institutions. And the third one, which is often not understood properly, was that there was also a trust from the point of view of the state and the authorities in the citizens, so that we were not treated as children that needed to be sort of, you know, put in their place.
So what is it about the Swedish psyche, Lars, that means you're better behaved than I am? Why would a people from other countries not do the same? Is there something particular in Sweden?
Well, I'm not sure, right, that wouldn't work elsewhere. The problem is that when you are choosing not to trust your own citizens and go for a kind of command approach associated with fines, you also invite resistance. So you have people sort of transgressing because there is a certain amount of fun in doing that. Had you chosen a more voluntary approach, it may have been that people actually would have followed it because there's nothing to gain from breaking rules that are really based on, you know, mutual consent. But having said that, it is true that all of the research we know of show that Sweden and the other Nordic countries and the Netherlands are high trust countries compared to just about all other countries in the world. So there is a big difference here. And we also have to remember that trust is also about social control. So that, you know, if you're out and about in Stockholm, you start to misbehave, you don't have any police chasing you down the street, but you have a bunch of people giving you a dirty look.
So there's moral pressure.
Absolutely.
And can you tell me about Anders Tegnell? Did you know who he was at the beginning of all this?
No, I did not. Who did? this guy just kind of came out of nowhere.
Det här är Sommar i P1 med Anders Tegnell.
He's a rather unexpected, media darling.
Det är Anders Tegnell,
statsepidemiolog. Corona ökar, Anders Tegnell är med och bemöter.
Anders Tegnell,
statsepidemiolog Anders Tegnell. God morgon och välkommen.
Tack.
Here is a guy who is not an elected official. He answers questions again and again and again. He's super calm. He doesn't get excited. You don't get any sense of panic.
Is there a fair amount of pressure in your daily life these days?
Oh, not that bad.
His whole ambiance and the way he talks and moves, I think he kind of captures this particular spirit that we see here of creating a distance between politics on the one hand and health authority on the other. You know, we don't want to have trigger-happy politicians that are doing grandstanding and you know, making dramatic gestures, partly maybe because so they can get re-elected later on down the road or get good numbers in the polls.
It sounds like you're a Tegnell fan.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean, we can talk more about, you know, the problems. I mean, nobody here is sort of neglecting or denying, let's say, the numbers of the elderly that died. But the bottom line, I think, is that it's been extremely calm here. No sense of panic, no uprising, no demonstrations, right? And I think he was sort of a key figure in exuding that degree of calm.
And he's gone from someone who was basically a low-profile bureaucrat to someone who is so loved that I think I even read some people have got tattoos of his face and you can buy an Anders Tegnell T-shirt. But what is it about this policy that made the public so happy to follow it when the entire world was doing something else?
Well, I mean, look, bottom line, right, is that people in general, including here in Sweden, prefer to be a bit more free, even if it means following certain types of instructions as when it comes to social distancing. So I don't think there's a big mystery here. You know, people in the world in general prefer to be freer than less free.
I want to have the free will on my own, and I really put a high price on that.
John, let's talk about why Sweden went down this road. It doesn't look like it's about the economy, because even with businesses staying largely open, the financial hit looks almost as bad as in other countries. What were they hoping to achieve?
There's a lot of debate about that. Tegnell and the other sort of Swedish officials who were in charge of designing the policy, they have said that their objective was always not to suppress the virus completely. Their objective instead was to allow the virus to spread, but at a sort of slow and gradual and controllable pace. And most importantly, in a way that the health service would continue to function. And I mean, it did. And the reason they did that, and this is what Tegnell has sort of like, you know, been hammering away at ever since March, whenever he's been interviewed, was that he sees that approach as ultimately more sustainable.
This level of measures that we have in Sweden, there is no problem for us to keep it running for months. Closing schools, more stringent measures like that, closing borders, you cannot do that for months or years ahead. But what we're doing in Sweden, we can continue to do for a long time. And I think that's going to prove to be very, very important in the long run.
If you persuade, convince, encourage people to behave in a way that will limit the spread of the virus, then you might hopefully start gradually building up a bit more immunity, and you won't have to go sort of, you know, into this sort of pattern, which he sees as inevitable, of coming out of lockdown and then having to go back into it and then coming out again, sort of stop-go approach.
That is what he said, but there was a lot of controversy within Sweden, wasn't there? A bit like here in the UK, around the idea that what they really wanted to do was to allow the virus to spread quickly so that they could achieve rapid herd immunity. Now, leaked emails have suggested it was being discussed, but they've denied it as a policy. And they instead say they wanted to protect the most vulnerable. We know that other countries felt that was too difficult to achieve. How did Sweden try to do it?
Well, Sweden banned all visits to old people's care homes from April. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough and it didn't work. I mean, there is a sort of a public inquiry going on at the moment in Sweden into what went wrong, but it was a disaster.
This is Moses Entanda, celebrating his 70th birthday at a restaurant in Stockholm 2 years ago. Last month during Easter, he died alone in his nursing home room from COVID-19.
Moses was my uncle and he was like a father to me.
Sweden is up nearly at about 5,900 deaths, and very nearly half of them occurred in care homes.
And then we could see the staff behind him. They weren't wearing any masks, no gloves.
You know, the staff didn't have the correct equipment. They were sort of commuting between care homes and transmitting the virus. And an awful lot went wrong.
Juliana and her husband begged the local authority and the staff at the care home to take him to hospital.
They said that that's not how they handle it when the old people get corona. They take care of them in the home instead of sending them to the hospital, and that he's not in need of hospital care.
And there were a lot of accusations, which are also being looked into, that there may have been a policy in some care homes of offering sort of palliative care to elderly people who had caught the disease, rather than taking them into intensive care units in hospitals, you know, sort of sacrificing that generation, which is obviously a really serious and an emotive accusation.
They think that the strategy that they're using is really good and that it's working. But if it's good, how come so many are dying?
I mean, that must have caused real tension in Sweden. Did the initial popular support for Tegnell start to slide?
It caused real tension. And that added to criticism that was coming in at Tegnell from quite a number of very serious fellow medical professionals in Sweden.
We are scientists. We don't trust authorities. We trust data. And we don't see the data that supports that we should go for this strategy as the only country in the world.
There were petitions. There were open letters. A lot of very fierce criticism of Tegnell, essentially saying you're gambling with the health of the Swedish population. And Tegnell has repeatedly said that much as he regrets the disaster in care homes and the very high death toll, you know, that he doesn't think it's fair to see it as part of the overall strategy.
Of course, something went wrong when 5,800 people died. That's definitely not something we expected, nothing we planned for, nothing we hoped for. But that does not mean that the strategy in itself has gone wrong.
Okay, so that was the justification for not fully locking down. And we know about what happened in care homes. But overall, how did the country fare?
What happened was that Sweden turned into one of the worst coronavirus epidemics in terms of death toll. There were a couple of weeks in May when Sweden had the highest death toll per capita in Europe. If we look at the numbers now, Sweden has a death toll of 577 per million inhabitants. Now, if you compare that with its immediate neighbours, it's orders of magnitude higher, nearly 10 times higher than in Finland and Norway, 5 times or so higher than in Denmark. But it's still lower than countries that had really, really tough lockdowns, like Italy and Spain and the UK. You know, comparable, but still just about lower. So Sweden, 577 deaths per million. The UK is currently at 633, Spain at 672, Italy at 593. But what's happened since then, I think, is also really interesting, which is that although there are now signs, I mean, quite clear signs, that the numbers of new cases are starting to tick up again in Sweden now, but they haven't so far shown anything like the same kind of really rapid surge that you've seen in countries like particularly France and Spain.
6 months after the first coronavirus wave in France, hospitals are once again on high alert.
Sweden's now up at about 40 new cases over the past 14 days per 100,000 people. France is at 235.
France's regional health agency has warned that hospitals across the country could come under severe pressure in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
The UK is at 100. And that's what prompted, you know, some people to start saying, well, hang on, what's happening in Sweden? Why are we getting this big increase and they're not?
And Matt Hancock, sorry.
And the point is...
Let me ask you about a fourth country. The fourth country obviously being Sweden, which did not introduce a tough lockdown, had much less restrictive measures, and which seems to have beaten the virus in a way that we haven't.
Well, sadly, I wish that were true as well, but it's not.
And Sweden, let's just focus in on that, and in particular, the comparison between the UK and Sweden, because clearly that is what is driving those conversations here. We had that really quite heavy lockdown, but as you say, we've had more deaths per million and we're facing what currently looks like a sharper second rise. Does that suggest that had we followed a Swedish style policy to not force people to completely lock down, that things might have been better?
I think we have to be really careful with comparing countries. You know, there are many factors that make Sweden different from other countries. You know, there is this thing of the sort of the level of trust in the public authorities. But there are, you know, there are sort of physical factors as well. Population density in Sweden is roughly 7 times less than that of the UK. And just over half of Sweden's households are single person households. So, you know, you don't have the kind of multi-generational households that are very common in, for example, in Southern Europe. But I think what is different about Sweden's approach is that it is an approach that is very clearly sort of tailored and developed for the country. For, you know, it's very specific to sort of Sweden's population, to the context in which Swedish people live and the culture that they have with regard to their government and their public authorities. For me, that's sort of the most interesting thing about the Swedish policy.
Okay, and if we can't say that the UK is directly comparable to Sweden because of all these other factors, what about the countries closer to home, the ones where you mentioned there were lower death rates? Don't they suggest that perhaps their lockdowns were more effective than Sweden's lack of one?
Well, the overall proportional death toll in the three Nordic countries is really significantly lower than it is in Sweden. But, you know, that's probably largely attributable to the disaster in Sweden's care homes. At the moment, Denmark has seen a very sharp uptick in new cases.
Would Hegnell argue that that surge in cases in Denmark could be a sign that a stricter lockdown is less sustainable?
Tegnell would certainly argue that wherever there's been a big surge in cases, France, Spain, Czech Republic, Denmark, Netherlands, Belgium, that could be evidence that his position from the start, which is that a really tough nationwide lockdown will kind of inevitably be followed by a real increase in the circulation of the virus. What's kind of interesting at the moment is that more and more countries seem to be believing him in that, you know, I mean, France has, and Spain, which are the two countries in Europe at the moment which have the highest number of new cases, have both effectively ruled out any chance of a full-blown new nationwide kind of mandatory lockdown. They're all looking at kind of local targeted measures.
Coming up, how did people in Sweden react to the lower death rates in their neighbouring countries? Lars, John has been pointing out that while Sweden fared better than a country like Britain, it had a much higher death rate than its immediate neighbours. Does that worry people in Sweden?
Well, certainly when it comes to particularly, right, the question of the elderly, we have plenty of things to learn here. When it comes to schools, on the other hand, right, it turns out that Sweden probably made the right choice. And the other Nordic countries have now turned to more Swedish policy in terms of opening up schools. So it's not such a simple thing. Remember, there are more than one metric involved here, right? The world has been dominated by kind of a crazy Champions League and mortality count. and not paid enough attention to the disastrous consequences for children. The extent to which children's well-being is central. In the Nordic countries, this is really key. So I think that what's going on right now has been a kind of a mutual learning process, whereby we are now trying to progress beyond this kind of a silly, corona nationalism, instead try to learn from each other.
We don't know what's going to happen in Sweden, but right now, with such steep increases in cases elsewhere, are people now persuaded by Tegnell's argument that it's a marathon, not a sprint?
I think so. I mean, I think that's why there is this new interest. And there was a huge interest when things were really bad in Sweden, right? Because it was sort of this story of here's the model country going bananas. And now there's a new interest in Sweden and the questions are different now. And now it's about the sustainability and, as you put it nicely, the marathon. So I think people here are probably less prone to this sort of dramatic switching back and forth between how we view what we're doing here. I think we have no illusions about this being over, but there is a sense that what we have done so far now looks pretty good in terms of the choice of policy, and that we would like to keep it at that level.
One of the things that's quite unusual about this is that Sweden has become like the poster boy for the libertarian right wing across the world, including here in the UK. And yet Swedish society isn't one that I would necessarily think as being on the right politically.
I think this is a great question, and this is something that I've actually been working on. I sometimes call Sweden the libertarian welfare state. We've had a stress on the alliance between state and individual here. And for a long time, it was a sort of paternalist arrangement, right, where the state had a sort of overbearing role. But over the last 20, 30 years, we've seen an increasing liberalization that have actually increased the space of individual freedom, individual choice, individual empowerment. So there's been a sort of neoliberal or liberal wave here since the early 1990s, which is actually different in Sweden from the other Nordic countries. Of course, it's not a right-wing libertarian version, but libertarian is still not a bad word to capture what's happening here.
John, finally, the reason that we're obsessed with Sweden is twofold. First of all, we want to think that there is a magic bullet that gets us out of this without draconian restrictions on our freedoms. But secondly, because the whole world is going through this crisis and is desperate to know what works and what doesn't, we know that Boris Johnson has had a conversation over Zoom with Anders Tegnell. The Tories are desperate to move in that direction. From everything you have learned reporting on this, what should the world take from this example? Should Britain be following in Sweden's footsteps?
I think it's really important to say it's way too early to say who's got it right and who's got it wrong. And things could still, as they did earlier in the year, go really disastrously wrong in Sweden. What we should bear in mind as well, of course, is that at the moment, the level of immunity in Sweden looks like it's significantly lower than what the public health agency predicted it would be. So, if one of the objectives of the Swedish strategy was to achieve, immunity, albeit slowly, but to achieve greater immunity than other countries, there's no real evidence yet that it's got there. But having said that, what the world and Britain should be taking from the Swedish model is not so much what measures Sweden took. It should probably not be about copying what Sweden actually did. I think what is most interesting is that the public health authorities took a long, hard look at what kind of a country Sweden was. It looked at the long-standing traditional relationship that government and public authorities have with the Swedish people. And it said, okay, we are going to build our policy around those facts. But it does, of course, demand a degree of knowledge about your country and a degree of trust in your people on the part of a government that other countries, including Britain, may simply not have.
John Henley, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was our Europe correspondent, John Henley, and Professor Lars Tregard. They've both written about Sweden's response to coronavirus. Do look up their pieces at theguardian.com. John has also been writing about the impact of the second wave in other parts of Europe. That's it for today. My thanks to John and Lars. This episode was produced by Rose Dell'Arabiti and Rachel Humphreys. Sound design was by Axel Gacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.